The following Dharma talk was given by Danika Shoang Ankele Osho at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shoang Osho is a Dharma holder and priest in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered freely. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon, everybody. Everybody at home and all of us who've been sitting together for days now. So I was having this memory and I thought, oh, this is one of these like moments in my life where like if I could go back and relive it, maybe even if I just had like one choice, don't hold me to that, but if I just had one moment or time that I could go back and relive, and not because I would do anything differently, not a like regret relive, but like a like, oh, I couldn't totally appreciate it then. One of those, like now I would appreciate it more. And it's a memory from 21 years ago when Gokhan and I were traveling for 3 weeks in India. And we were in northern India in Ladakh, which is, you know, right up there between, well, I guess it's part of India. I guess part, it's like a territory that's contested, right? There's like Kashmir, India, Pakistan, China, and the Himalayas. And we took this trip into the Nubra Valley. So like over these foothills in the Himalayas, 18,000 feet. Is that possible? Yeah, okay. Suddenly that just seemed like so high. But yeah, and there was a sign, you know, at the top of the pass, and then back down into the valley. And we spent a few days traveling around and visiting these different monasteries, these different gompas. And Ladakh is culturally very Tibetan. And so these were like Tibetan Buddhist gompas. And so there was this one afternoon where we had either finished or we hadn't yet gotten to the gompa that we were going to visit. And we were kind of, you know, a little ways away in a sort of less defined terrain around the monastery. And we heard this voice calling out. And lo and behold, like a little ways away, somewhere a little ways up the hillside, but not very far, was an old nun calling out and waving. And I thought, to us? Is she talking to us? And we had this sort of moment, and Gokhan was like, I think she wants us to come. And so we walked toward her, and sure enough, she was very ardently beckoning us. And it turned out she was calling us inside this little hut where there was this gathering of nuns. And so it turned out, we learned later, that like, because they didn't have their own monastery or convent, periodically they would travel, the nuns of the region would travel to come together to practice in one of the outbuildings of this monastery. And so this is what was happening. I mean, we sort of got that vibe. It was filled with these like very wizened, bald-headed, diminutive in size but not in spirit women. And they had us join them in this kind of circle, and they were chanting, I don't know what, and they served yak butter tea. And what I learned the hard way is that if you drink the yak butter tea, they will refill it, right? So I drank a lot of yak butter tea. And it's the moment I would choose, because at the time I was kind of in a state of like, wait, what's happening and what's going on? And like, I knew it was like so awesome that I could be there, but then I wasn't actually totally there. You know, it was one of those. And so I would love to go back and drop in to that experience and maybe bring a few of you along with me. So it's in that spirit that I was thinking about how like one of the qualities that I recall or imaginatively recall about that gathering was just the sense of like the maturation and ripening of practice. And one of the amazing things about being in a sangha over the long haul is like we get to feel that in each other. It's so cool. And last Sunday I gave the talk at the temple, and part of my talk I referenced the five reminders of the Buddha. I am of the nature to grow old. I am not beyond growing old is the first. And in my talk, I mentioned that like I had seen a translation that said, I'm of the nature to decay. I am not beyond decay. And afterwards, one of the you know, Sangha elders at the temple said to me, like, Shoan, I didn't appreciate decay. And so this is a slight revision. I'm of the nature to mature and to ripen. So, two poems by ripened women of the way. This first is by Miao Zan, who is a Chan nun of the late 13th, early 14th century. In the shade of two trees and the hanging green of the cliffs, one lamp for 1,000 years broke open the dark barriers. I too now realize that phenomena are nothing but a magic show, and happily grow old among the mist, the rivers, and stones. Then, from same time period, early 14th century, Lala, or Lal Ded, from Kashmir, a mystic, a Hindu Kashmiri mystic. Searching for you, I discovered the moon's light in my own house. Searching for you, I found that like are united to like. What are these constantly changing, playful forms? There is only you, my mother. There is only you. A few points of complementary poetic pointing that one lamp in Miao Zhan's poem, the one lamp that broke open the dark barriers, and in Lal Ded's poem, the moon's light discovered in her own house. This light, Yan Wu, who is the a couple hundred years earlier, not quite, 12th century Chan monastic teacher, the compiler of the Blue Cliff Record, or the one who wrote the commentaries on Suedo's verses and cases that he had compiled. He writes in letters to his disciples, "Fundamentally, this great light is there with each and every person, right where they stand, empty, clear through, spiritually aware, all pervasive. It is called the scenery of the fundamental ground. The myriad phenomena never had any fixed characteristics. They are all transformations based on this light." When we hear the same teaching across time and space, doesn't it inspire a certain kind of faith? So I wanted to look at what we talk about as the three pillars of Zen, which is a teaching that goes back even earlier than these poems to, again, a Chinese monk, really a contemporary of Miao Zhan, also 13th century China, Gaofeng Yuan Miao, who is the one who actually coined the three pillars of Zen. It became much more popularized, I think, under Hakuin, who wrote about it with, you know, great vigor and a particular Hakuin slant in his writings. But I wanted to just think about how these energies or qualities change, how they ripen, how they mature, how we can use faith and doubt and determination. We have to, right at the start, first encountering practice, and then how we're cultivating and kind of refining our relationship with them all the way, I think as far as we go. They're always there. So like from just a drop of faith maybe, and just an inkling of doubt, and just enough determination, let's say, to sit through a period of Zazen. Little by little, these mature and ripen, and that greatness, seeps out. One thing as I was reflecting on this is just like the interesting, I think it's a very skillful teaching to sort of tease out these three qualities and name them and kind of offer them back to us as practitioners. And like, as soon as you start to look, like so much in practice, as soon as you start to look at one, you see like, oh, they're all connected. You can't really pick up one without picking up the others. So intertwined and so complementary. So thinking about how like those first touches, right, of faith and doubt and also determination. Sometimes it comes to us in that sort of that feeling. I've heard many people over the years, and I know it from myself, speak about of this feeling that something's like off. We're in our life, you know, maybe we're finding greater or lesser degree of ease, contentment, conventional success, the things that we were looking for. And then there's this feeling of like, is this it? That's like that first inkling of doubt. Is this it? Really? It's like, you know, that, okay, we've lived maybe long enough, and I think it hits people really at different places in our life. We've lived long enough to see, like, this is how it is, right? I remember for me, it was kind of like at the threshold of reaching, you know, adulthood in my early 20s and being like, okay, I'm here. And I guess this is just how it is now, right? There's not that next thing. Roshi was talking about that recently, that like next point. This is how it is. Like, really? An inkling of doubt. And right there, this is where you can really see how closely related they are. Because if we find our way to practice, it's because right there was also some seed of faith. Like, is this it? No. No, it can't be. There's got to be more. There's got to be another way. That drop. And then that first morsel of determination, we do something. We do something. If we find our way to practice, it's not because someone came and found us and held our hand and led us. We had to go and look. Sometimes by the time we've gotten, you know, to a sangha in the Dharma, we've like looked a lot, exhaustively. Our determination has been ripening. And sometimes we're just starting, and that determination is going to have to ripen in a different way. So there's like this twofold aspect of faith. There's like encountering the Dharma and practice and having enough faith in it, like in the teachings. I certainly remember sitting in the Zendo and hearing Daito Roshi offer talks on koans and really like both like really not understanding what he was talking about and also feeling like, I am making contact with something that's true. And then there's also faith in our own, in a way it's not a different thing. Faith in like the fact that it is possible to resolve our suffering, right? At one point or another, we encounter the Buddha's teaching maybe that lands for us right away. Life is suffering, and the Four Noble Truths that surround that teaching. So if we stick around, how do these develop? And I bring this up because you all have stuck around long enough to be here on the Friday of August session. So we're developing, even if you're just getting started. Well, so somebody this session asked, am I responsible for my suffering? A relatively new practitioner. Like, this is exactly those things starting to really take root. Yes. Yes. That's the teaching. And that practice of what does it mean to take responsibility for our suffering becomes a big chunk of our study and our developing understanding. When we start to see how our suffering comes from our own mind and how we use it, this is a massive, massive insight. Shugen Roshi has often invoked the revolution, right? There's a revolution, bloodless, that is taking place. And this insight into I am responsible, suffering comes from how I use my mind. We have to learn this and discover this again and again and again and again. And we keep encountering the exception to that. No, actually, this suffering is this person's fault. This suffering has to do with this situation and the way it's not like being handled well. No. Okay, so faith in practice means when I see that, when I see my suffering, faith in practice, doubt also, so doubt here, right, in the sense of inquiry, I don't know if I made that totally clear. The great doubt of Zen is like things are not as they appear. What's going on? The question, right? Those have to come forward so that, like, when I'm struggling, I remember to practice. Not always the first impulse. Just the other day, I was taking the bus up from the temple, and I really like that first seat on the bus. And I got on, there was a woman in the first seat, and I said, can I sit here with you? And she said, yes, a little begrudgingly, but she was okay with it. So I sat down, and then she had an issue with her leg, and she was like, you know what? I really need to be on the other side of the aisle so that I can like lead my leg out into the aisle. And at this point, the bus had really filled up. Like, we were getting ready to leave, and I was like, okay. So I helped her move her stuff, and so guess what? I had an empty seat. She was on the other side, so here's the seats, right? And she moved all the way over here. And so it was me and my empty seat. We're getting ready to go. And all of a sudden, on come three more people. And so I saw in myself irritation, like there goes my empty seat. And this fellow said, you know, can I sit here? And I had to sort of like very quickly like be a practitioner and be like, okay, what am I gonna do in this moment? What am I gonna do in this moment? I was like, of course, welcome, right? Suffering comes from my own mind. He and I ended up having a very fascinating conversation, and what an interesting person, and what a delight to while away so much time on the bus chatting with him, Coleman. Yeah. So there it is, right? And so as we're again and again having to have this recognition, being a practitioner, being turned back to ourselves, you know, being supported by the Sangha. And our peers in the Sangha, our teachers, to like again and again, like return, like, okay, it's here, what am I doing? We start to really gain a confidence that like our life is not about external forces happening to us. This is such a radical shift. And if you have been practicing for some period of time and you have friends who are not, it becomes one of the first places where you can actually witness, at least in my experience, the like, oh, like I'm approaching my life differently now, right? You talk to your good friend about their struggle and they're still externalizing, maybe. And you see like, oh, that's different. I would be different in this. So what do we see? What are we actually seeing when we look at this suffering? This is back to Yan Wu's letter, and I think a nice carryover from Gikan's talk. There he is, the other day, yeah. All right, so he has said, fundamentally, this great light is there with each and every person right where they stand, empty, clear through, spiritually aware, all pervasive. It is called the scenery of the fundamental ground. Okay. Sentient beings and Buddhas are both inherently equipped, with it. Okay? Sentient beings, that's us, and Buddhas, we both have this great light. It is perfectly fluid and boundless, fusing everything within it. It is within your own heart and is the basis of your physical body and of the five clusters of form, sensation, conception, he says motivational synthesis, and consciousness. Sensation, conception, discrimination, we say. I think that's better. It has never been defiled or stained, and its fundamental nature is still and silent. False thoughts suddenly arise, and don't they? Suddenly, false thoughts suddenly arise and cover it over and block it off and confine it within the six sense faculties and sense objects. Sense faculties and sense objects are paired off, right? So what I see and the object of sight are paired off, and you get stuck and begin clinging and getting attached. You grasp at all the various objects and scenes and produce all sorts of false thoughts. So false thought suddenly has arisen. We've glommed on self and other objects and me. And now I'm grasping, and it's proliferating more and more false thoughts. It's proliferating my impulse to cling. It's proliferating my sense of self and other. And so we sink down into the toils of birth and death, unable to gain liberation. This is a description of something that we can observe. If we cultivate our mind and cultivate our attentional stability, which we are in the midst of doing, and really look to see, we can see this happening. We can see it happening. And so as we start to see, this is the reality, right? We kind of catch these glimpses. This is the reality. We catch these glimpses and we start to gain more faith. Okay. It is. It's my mind. It is. It's my mind. And when the struggle comes or the uncomfortable feeling comes or the suffering in whatever form it takes comes, we don't always know how to practice it. We can't always sort of like find our way gracefully through that particular tangle, but we have a sense of what is going on. And more that clarifies. So as our faith deepens, our ability to investigate also deepens, and our determination, our sense that there's something to do, and our conviction that we can do it, also ripen. Yan Wu says, the most important thing is for people of great faculties and sharp wisdom to turn the light of mind around and shine back and clearly awaken to this mind before a single thought is born. This mind can produce all world-transcending and worldly phenomena. The magic show. The constantly changing playful forms. Really. And, you know, that question about what do we do with all the thoughts, right? We can have enough experience to be able to see, like, okay, it is my mind. It is my mind. But those thoughts that arise suddenly, sometimes the language of the tradition really speaks about, like, you know, cutting off. What does Yan Wu say? Somewhere he talks about cutting off or ending all thoughts. And this can be such a struggle depending on how we understand it and engage it, right? That sense that we're going to control the situation. Okay, that's not necessary. The thoughts are the magic show. When you go to a magic show and there's an apparition of, like, I don't know, a scary demon, do you have to, like, get a bunch of weapons and amass the audience and be like, let's go get it. Come on, people. No one's worried about it. No one's worried about it. It's an apparition. It's not real. We're really attached in a way. I mean, we're invested in our thoughts and we can see that they're not real sometimes and we persist, you know, with gusto and stubbornness to stay invested in them. I mean, I think that's why practice, for me, that is why practice takes a long time. It's like I'm committed to my magic show. Thank you. I want it. I want it. There, I was staying at someone's house recently and they have a small child and they had this spray on the counter that said monster under the bed spray. And I was like, oh, that's so sweet, right? And like the parents don't need to worry about whether the spray works or not because they know there's like no monster under the bed. We're just gonna do this for the little one to allay their fears. So because the habit is so deep and because we are so invested, we really have to bring our determination and that mind of inquiry alive again and again and again. We have to gain experience, because we keep getting fooled. There's an image in the teachings that, like, if someone tells you that there are tigers in a certain valley, and you go there, you will not feel safe unless you have checked for yourself the whole area and seen that there are no tigers. Then you've looked, you see, okay, there's no tigers, I can relax. In the same way, our own inquiry, our own study, our own insight into the fact that thoughts are not real has to be that exhaustive. We have to be that thoroughgoing that we can relax. And then there's no problem. But that takes time and practice. Hard won. It's not enough to read it in a book. It's definitely not enough to hear someone talk about it. It has to be our own experience. It has to be our own experience. That thing about the tigers reminded me of just, you know, that sense like, okay, you cannot relax. You cannot relax until you know. So a few years back when Gokhan and I were living at the temple, I guess we were both up here. Zuise was down at the temple. This was during a period when the temple had a little wee rat problem. Remember that? Yeah. Oh my God. And the Temple Zendo, for those who haven't been there, is on the ground floor. That's like right above the basement. That's like, it was like, yeah. And I have two rat stories. They both have the same point, so I really don't need to tell them both. So in one of these rat stories, I'm just going to tell one. I am not going to indulge. Okay, in one of these rat stories, Zuise was actually down at the temple. This is like the better fit. Zuise was down at the temple doing the Sunday program. And so she's the one that told me about this. But apparently they were sitting in the Zendo. It was a full Sunday. Y'all who've been to the temple, you know what a full Sunday is like. And somebody saw a rat. Now, the monitors sit at the front of the Zendo, and everyone's facing the front of the Zendo. So if something happens in the front of the Zendo, all you need to do is raise your eyes, and you can, like, see the whole thing. And so apparently a rat had run behind the monitors, right? So a whole bunch of people, I don't know how many, like, you know, saw this rat. Well, the point of the story is that Zuise's response, which I think was very skillful, was to say, okay, we're done in here, we're going upstairs, the rest of the Sunday program is happening in the Buddha Hall. Right? She knew, like, no one's going to be able to relax. Even if we say, like, okay, it's under control, we've got the rat, don't worry, no one's going to be able to relax, right? Unless you know, okay, there's no rat in this space. So they moved upstairs. And I guess people got a kick out of it, you know. It's like a adversity bonds the sangha. And the rest of the program happened, no problem. So when we see into our own proliferation, don't you want to know the other rat story? I'm going to tell you really quick, okay? Really quick. I think it was a Zazen Kai, or it was morning Zazen, and Gokhan and I were sitting in the monitor row, so we're facing this way, and everybody else is facing us. And I sense movement, and I, like, turn to look, and I see along the baseboard, on the wall is a rat sort of scuttling along, and I'm just like, my heart starts pounding, and I look over, and Gokhan has seen it too, and we both are just like looking at each other. And I very calmly get up and open the door to that, like, ante room that leads to the Daisan room, and I let the rat in there. Yeah, for face-to-face teaching. Yeah. And closed the door, and then later went in to try and find it and get it out. And I never found it. But anyway, I couldn't relax. Yeah, I couldn't relax. All right, so those are the rat stories. Yeah, now I'm going to stop. So now, when we start to see, okay, thought is not real, right? Now we have to be determined and really start to recognize that as consistently as we are possibly able. And Sishin is a wonderful context in which to do that, because it's the conditions are most conducive to actually seeing our mind and recognizing what's happening and not just being swept along by the flow. So with such determination, maybe we get some glimpses of quiet. Just a glimpse. And I was listening to an interview, and one of the people in the interview is a longtime practitioner, used to study with Tulku Urgen Rinpoche, and then was an assistant to Pema Chodron up at Gampo Abbey. And he said that when he was a newer practitioner and he was studying with Tulku Urgen Rinpoche, he They were in, you know, kind of, it sounds kind of like what we would consider a mondo, that kind of question and answer session. And this person, Tim Olmsted is his name, said that he had kind of had like a moment of like, you know, quiet and sort of glimpsing what in that tradition they would call nature of mind. I mean, I guess we call it that too. And he was like, he said to Tulku Urgyen Rinpoche, like, that's it? Like, I was really expecting something more, like, that's it? And Tulku Urgyen Rinpoche, he describes it, they said they were sitting in this room where there was renovation going on. And so there was a window that was totally covered with black plastic. And Tulku Urgyen Rinpoche said, yeah, okay, it's just a glimpse. It's just a glimpse, but you have to imagine that, like, on that black plastic, you've just, like, pierced a hole. And so that one hole, like, all right, big deal. He said, but you keep practicing, and you glimpse, and you glimpse, and you glimpse, and you're poking all these holes, right, in that black plastic until it totally falls away. So this is great determination, steadiness. It's knowing how to direct our effort that we don't need to get rid of in that sort of conventional sense. That in a sense we can move from just pacifying our difficult feelings to truly illuminating their essential nature. Seeing what they are for ourselves. And so as we are maturing, as we are ripening along the way, as our mind and heart soften, as our natural luminosity shines, then that, like, those qualities of, like, that great faith, like what in an enlightened Buddha, what does that look like? When I read in the teachings from masters who talk about, like, welcoming their difficult feelings, right? Welcoming adversity, welcoming all those thoughts. That is, like, very ripe faith. When I read in the teachings about the equality of all experience, or perhaps in our own practice, when we have that glimpse and we see, like, oh, one taste, it said, again, ripening. The good experiences, the bad experiences, the really pristine mind of Zazen, and the agitated, moving mental proliferation. No problem. Rebecca Lee, when she was here, she would say, no problem. No problem. And then great doubt. How does that ripen, that inquiry, that investigation? I've been thinking about this and, like, how, like, we learn to be at ease in the mystery. I was thinking about, like, the Enso, right? And I remember hearing Daidashi talk about the Enso and how, like, that circle doesn't close, right? That's part of the Enso, is it doesn't close. And in a way, like, I always, like, well, I want my Enso to be closed, I want to know the whole thing, right? And what is the ease of like Bodhidharma's? I don't know. What is that? And that great determination, how does that ripen? How does that mature? I think about like the effort of no effort, nothing to do. We don't need to manipulate our mind. Just let it be. Just be awake. Just look directly. Niazhan says, what are these constantly changing, playful? No, she says, I too now realize that phenomena are nothing but a magic show, and happily grow old among the mist, the rivers, and the stones. Yanwu says, if you can cut off again, if you can release clinging to objects and inwardly forget your false ideas of self, things themselves are the true self, and the true self itself is things. Things and true self are one suchness, opening through to infinity. Phenomena are nothing but a magic show. I happily grow old among the mist, the rivers, and the stones. What are these constantly changing, playful forms, says Lala. There is only you, my mother. Only you. What incredible fortune. What possibility. In the span of this session, we are right in the thick of our own maturing and ripening. Our own faith, our own inquiry, our own practice, moment by moment. Really look. Really look so you can see what's going on.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.